Can't believe it's already been a month since we chatted, Jeffrey Rabin. Welcome back to WGN. How you doing?
John, I'm doing great. Thank you. And thank you for having me back here. The last time was a lot of fun. I heard a lot of comments, and we actually did get some phone calls.
Well, that's what we like to hear, baby. And of course you did. There's people out there, a lot of people that listen to WGN that have issues with Social Security, broadly speaking, also SSDI and SSI. I'm going to kind of refresh the scene here. What are the two things that I just said? Because I've even forgotten the acronyms.
So there are two primary disability programs that are administered by the Social Security Administration. The first one is called Social Security Disability Insurance Benefits, or SSDI. That's for people who are totally disabled, and we can discuss what that means, and who have worked and paid into the FICA system for enough quarters to buy that coverage.
Okay.
The other program, SSI, Supplemental Security Income, is for people who are totally disabled and indigent. So indigent for this purpose means they have less than $2,000 in non-excludable resources and no other money coming in, and they're so disabled that they can't perform work.
Okay, so those are the two programs, one of which we pay into as an insurance, right? SSDI.
Correct.
Okay, so when you say totally disabled, and I just want to point this out. We still say disabled for, based on Social Security's definition. Some people prefer the term differently abled. We're going to use them kind of interchangeably here. The government says disabled, and that's what we're going to go with for this program. Just laying that out there. Language is important, of course. All right, so what does totally disabled mean in the eyes of the government?
So for purposes of these programs, so that's why we can use that phrase totally disabled.
Right.
It means the inability to perform any type of what Social Security calls substantial gainful activity, or we'll call work, for a period that's lasted or expected at least a year because of severe medical symptoms. It's not because of diagnosis. It is because people are suffering from medical symptoms which so impact their ability to function that for at least 12 months – they're going to be unable to perform any type of full-time work activity.
Not just the job you used to have. You're talking about any job.
That's correct, especially for people under 50. At 50, if you don't have a GED education, your age becomes a factor. At 55, a little more, primarily if you've done unskilled or heavy work. But the general rule is not the job that you've done in the past, what they call past relevant work, but any type of work available in the national economy.
So if I lost my voice, which is my primary tool for all my jobs, and I were to go to SSDI, they would say, well, there's other things you can do with the rest of your body and have a job. Maybe that's a bad example. I don't know.
That's a tough example. Okay. Because the inability to communicate.
True.
On any job, you have to be able to speak
a little bit. Fair.
But let's take a more common call I get is somebody who's lost vision in an eye. And that's very traumatic.
Of course.
But losing vision in one eye is almost never totally disabling because there are many, many jobs that you can do with one eye.
Interesting. That is a great example. And some people might say, hey, that's unfair, but that's the system we have.
It's very unfair if you think you're entitled to the money and then you find that these very technical rules make you ineligible. We spend most of our day explaining to people why they're not eligible because they're calling, hoping that they can get these benefits, but the reality is, if they were to file an application, they would sit around for a year and a half just waiting to be denied.
You made a point to distinguish between diagnosis and symptoms. Why make that distinction?
I had a wonderful opportunity this week to meet with the neurologists at Northwestern Hospital who focus their practice in treatment of people with epilepsy. These are really dedicated doctors who care. And they asked me to come to explain that. So let's take that as an example. Somebody who has epilepsy or seizure disorder has a very serious diagnosis. But if they're taking their medicine, their Dilantin, their Tegretol, whatever the medicine of the day is, and they're not having seizures, they're not having symptoms. If they're not having symptoms, you know, maybe not a bus driver or an iron worker, But there's millions of jobs that somebody who's not having seizures, even though they carry a diagnosis, are able to perform. I mean, another example that's very common, and people call me up with high blood pressure. Well, a serious diagnosis, it actually impacted my father significantly, but take your medicine, watch your diet, get some exercise, and go to work, because it's a serious diagnosis, but it doesn't produce symptoms that impact function and impact the ability to perform a job.
It does bring up the point, as we're starting to get some calls, 312-981-7200. When you go to present a case, either you, the individual out there, or someone with you, Jeffrey, do you have medical paperwork at least outlining the symptoms then that that person has, or does their own testimony suffice?
So actually, that's a great question, because in the law, in the regulations, somebody's testimony is not supposed to be sufficient evidence to establish their inability to work. You are always focusing on medical charts. So our first call screening with Kelly for somebody who calls my office is asking, why do you think you can't work, and what doctors are you seeing? And we go through that list, and then we decide, okay, there's a basis for an application here. Then they come for a more detailed meeting where we discuss what those symptoms are and what those doctors are. And we try to teach every client how to describe their symptoms to their doctor so that they get in the charts and then can become evidence.
And that's not nefarious. You're just trying to make sure the doctor understands what we need to see, which is legitimately what the person's going through.
A huge side effect of our work that we're all very proud of is we actually improve people's health care. Because it's very typical for somebody to go to the doctor, and a doctor says, hey, Jeff, how are you? And I say, I'm okay, doc, how are you? Well, I'm not okay, or I'm not going to the doctor. So it's much more important for me to say to the doctor, you know, I'm having this back pain, and it's so bad that I can't sleep at night, and I tried picking up my grandchild, and I was in bed for 2 days, and my wife, who has her own health history, has to carry the grocery bags because it takes my back pain from a 3 to a 7, and I can't do it. That's information that's actually going to improve my medical care and improve my future, and at the same time, creating the evidence that I'll need down the road to get them this help.
Okay. What is your phone number if people want to reach out to you?
Our phone number is 847-299-0008. Or you can communicate with us through our website, which is RKB, Robert Kevin Bruce, legal.com.
RKB, legal.com. Let's go to the phone lines. Patricia, good afternoon. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hello, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. You sound so nice. Thank you for calling.
Well, so do you. I have a very important question that has been on my mind for a while. My husband is very, very ill, and he gets his Social Security check by the 15th of the month. Now, it goes into our bank account, and I pay bills with it. Should he pass away the same month that he gets his check, do they take that money away from me?
Okay, that's a basic, I don't want to say it's basic, it's an important, and sorry about your husband's illness, by the way, Patricia. Just general Social Security question. Jeffrey, do you happen to know the answer to that, or do you want to defer to an expert?
No, that one I know, okay. And Patricia is right. This is one of the bad things in the law. The month that somebody passes away, if they've already received their Social Security check, whether it's disability or retirement, that check has to be refunded to Social Security. And you'll get your $255 death benefit. But the month that the person passes away, they're not entitled to that check.
Okay, but don't spouses then start getting a check if that's how that works, right?
It depends. Depends on whether her own benefit may be greater than her percentage as a widow's benefit may be, how old she is. There's a bunch of factors, but sometimes the answer is yes.
Patricia,
yeah,
did that?
His is more than mine.
Oh, his is more than yours. Okay.
He did. Yeah, I get much less than his. So I guess I get a little bit of his onto mine. I think that's the way it works.
Yeah. But, Jeffrey's not. Yeah.
Yes, it should.
Yeah, thank you. Well, thank you. That's what I was thinking, that I was right, and the answer is what I thought. But, John, thank you.
Of course, Patricia. Much. Take care, okay?
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. What a sweetheart. Call anytime, Patricia, even just to talk. If you want to call at the end of the show, I'll chat with you anytime. Her husband's ill. That makes me feel so sad. Okay. What a pleasant-sounding voice, though, Patricia. Okay. Before I start crying, let's talk about when you mentioned Kelly might take the call at the office at the number that you'll say a couple more times here, of course, before you go. And then you're going to look and have them have a meeting afterwards. I can hear some people in the audience going, boy, this is going to add up in cost really quickly. Do you charge by the hour? How do you get paid for helping someone else get their SSDI?
The truth is that Social Security disability lawyers are the best deal in town.
Okay.
So we only get paid if we win. So all of our work is done on a contingency fee basis. When we win, our fee is regulated by Social Security.
Oh, that's like legally binding how it works.
Anybody who's being represented in any other manner than what I'm going to describe should be running. So our fee is 25% of the first back benefit check, or $9,200, which is the current cap set by the commissioner, whichever is smaller.
And it's likely the former, right? Not the latter.
For most people. So if their back benefit check, that first back benefit check is $2,000, our fee is $500.
Okay.
Social Security charges us a $135 processing fee that only Social Security lawyers in this country pay, and then they actually send the check to me. So if everything goes smoothly, my clients never write a check out to me.
Speaking of back payment, how does that work? Is it from the moment an injury yields you unable to perform duties, or is it from the moment they file something with Social Security and they get paid for the lingering time that it takes to work this out?
So now I'm going to give you the classic lawyer's answer.
Depends.
I'm going to say both.
Both. Okay,
so
that's even worse.
For SSDI, Social Security determines your date of onset or the date that you became totally disabled. That could very likely be the date of an accident.
Okay.
They don't pay benefits for the first 5 full months. They call it the elimination period. We call it the starvation period.
Yeah, those are the elimination period sounds terrible, by the way. That starvation. Wait, why do they do that? Sorry to pause you there.
In fairness to Social Security, almost every insurance plan has a waiting period.
Okay.
Corporate long-term disability plans do. It's a waiting period that was actuarially built into the law from the very beginning.
Okay. So 5 months after the accident or the onset of the symptoms,
that's when benefits would begin.
Okay.
So let's pretend I'm in an auto accident. Today, it's August of 2025. They don't pay benefits for September, October, November, December, January. My first check would be February of 2026. My back benefit check would be from February 2026 to whatever date my case is actually approved.
Okay.
The rep's fee is 25% of that amount up to the commissioner's cap.
But you don't like if someone calls you like a month after they would get benefits, you don't not help them out because your check's going to be smaller, I assume.
But maybe
your competitors do. I don't know.
I won't speak to my competitors, but I will tell you that I never ask or care what my fee is going to be in a particular case. I care if I can win or not. If I get no fee, and that's happened when we win a case very quickly in the first 5 months for somebody with a really serious issue, that person is going to send me more business.
Right, they're
going
to refer you to someone else.
Or you know what? We just won that case and helped that family, and that's why we work. I'm not trying to be heroic, but we don't turn cases down based on fees.
You and I haven't known each other that long, but in that limited time, that totally fits with who I think you are.
No, thank you.
I mean, seriously, you do a lot of work in the community with NAMI, which is an organization we've talked about here on WGN, which does incredible stuff in Illinois. And that's what everyone says about you that I've chatted with, Jeffrey. You know, I do my homework, my friend, just to make sure. We don't want anybody just sitting down in this chair and talking. But, okay, so, yeah, if you are able to do it quickly, then, yeah, you don't get a check. But, hey, good for you for helping the family and good for you for having maybe other people that are friends with that person or word by mouth clients come to you and do this work. I got to take this break. We got the news coming up. 312-981-7200. Get on the phone line now. What I don't want to have happen is at 1:57, a few of you go, oh, that's right, I should call now because he's going to leave at 2. Call now. Get on the phone line. SSDI, SSI. I haven't even opened the text line. I'll do that in a moment. But I love to hear your voices. Like Patricia, she was so sweet. And Jeff, give your number 2 times here.
Our office is at 847-299-0008.
One more time.
847-299-0008.
And it's rkblegal.com, correct?
Yes, sir.
Jeffrey Rabin here. He does Social Security or SSDI and SSI help. So generally speaking, your office takes a claim that someone has for SSDI, disability insurance. It's disability insurance, right? You've already explained this 6 times to me. Sorry. Or SSI. And you help them go through this process, which can be elongated and it can be difficult. A lot of cases end up not working out for people that apply, right?
Absolutely. Not every case is approved.
Right.
When we take a case, though, we believe in that client and we believe that client should get the help. And that's true for anybody that really does this work on a serious basis. Very few Social Security firms take every case and just hope that people get paid because you're playing with people's lives. Mm-hmm. Somebody who you know after doing this for 20, 30, 40 years is not going to get approved. You don't want them sitting and going through this process for a year and a half, 2 years, only to be denied and then be further out of the workforce and have more erosion of their work skills and then a harder time sustaining themselves afterwards.
Yeah, which is why that call that they'll probably have with Kelly if they call your number just as like a chat through your story is an important one. It helps make sure that, first of all, why not call and ask if you're curious, right? You're going to get an answer one way or the other, whether you guys think that they have a case or not, or whether it's worth a deeper dive. And that alone can be peace of mind for people who maybe were on the fence or didn't quite know, I don't really know. Get some answers.
What's also interesting from the lawyer's perspective is many of the people who we spend time with and explain why they don't have a claim are good referral sources down the road.
Right.
Because they just appreciate that somebody took the time, explained the details of this program. We don't speak lawyer talk in our office, and they just get their answers, and they can go about their life, and they just appreciate that.
Absolutely. 630 just texted in. Is this segment going to be available to listen to later? I need to listen to it again. Is it going to be posted on the website? Yes, WGNradio.com. There's a Let's Get Legal button, and you can find all conversations, including one we had just a month ago with Jeffrey, where we dived into some other questions, too. So if that is useful to go back and listen, and I think it could be if this is pertaining to you or someone you know, or you want to send them the link to this, please do. Jeffrey and I are nodding along. Yes, spread it far and wide. 217 texted in. Just tuned in. My daughter has had long COVID for 3 years. They say they're finally hiring an attorney to get long-term disability. She's been living a nightmare. She's documented every medical symptom and follow-ups. I'm glad you're hiring an attorney. If you end up not liking that person, I just say call Jeffrey. But we wish them well on their case. I'm sure there's other attorneys that do it admirably. But long COVID, is that something that you've seen as a symptom and a diagnosis, but a symptom, the symptoms of it being approved ultimately by Social Security?
Yes, we've represented a number of people suffering from long COVID. In the beginning, it was hotly contested.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the diagnosis isn't the issue. Long COVID produces a lot of long-term symptoms, severe chronic fatigue, breathing problems, sometimes depression and emotional health problems. It could cause pain. So the key is making sure that your client is going to the doctors and describing those symptoms and describing how those symptoms are impacting their day-to-day life. I could not go to my son's Little League game. I missed my father's birthday party. My fatigue was so bad that my husband yelled because I haven't showered in 3 days. Those types of descriptions of symptoms and the stories in the medical charts, that's the evidence then that we use to prove eligibility. And more important, it's communicating to the doctor so that they can make intelligent medical decisions and help their patients more.
Just a broad statement about long COVID. I know there's still people out there denying or wondering what the heck that is. How is that possible? I think less and less, especially here in Chicago, after hearing the story of Jonathan Toews, former Blackhawks captain, of course, now playing for Winnipeg, and I cannot wait to see him back on the ice. I hope it goes so well, and we'll see him January 19th at the United Center. But I think someone like that, who is a high-profile athlete in the best shape of any of our lives,
correct,
in their mid-30s, going through that and being public about that, what a brave thing to do when so many people even deny that long COVID is something that exists, for him to do it and to put on a brave face and show how it impacted him. He'd want to be on the ice. Are you kidding me? And I think and I hope that other stories like that, because there's been other celebrities or well-known figures that have done that, have maybe changed the hearts and minds of people around that as a possible legitimate explanation and deserving of SSDI.
In our world, we've learned that long COVID is not a political issue. It's a medical issue.
For sure. That also brings up an interesting other stigma that's out there, or people don't believe it's as serious as other people make it out to be. It's mental health issues. Talk to us about the mental health aspects of SSDI. Is there possible to get SSDI if you're going through a crisis mentally?
So mental health is a medical condition, and just like a physical health problem is, and Social Security has guidelines in it, what it calls its listings of impairments, which are its medical guidelines. It has a whole section just on how you work with people with mental illness and interpret their application. So depending upon which diagnosis, whether it's depression, anxiety, developmental disorder, intellectual disorder, PTSD, which is part of anxiety, it could be schizophrenia. There are a series of requirements in the listings, which if we can document in the medical records, we can get people benefits. Because of my years of work with NAMI, both where I work now at NAMI Cook County North Suburban, and prior to that I was on the board of NAMI DuPage, and I've also done a lot of work with NAMI Metro and NAMI McHenry and NAMI Lake County, represented many, many people with mental illness. And the stories are sometimes heartbreaking. You talk to parents with a 25-year-old bipolar son and what is going on in their home and in their lives, you just want to break down. So if we can help use Social Security benefits to sustain that person for a while, secure their access to health care, use the carrot of benefits to keep them in treatment, we found a lot of them call me back 2, 3, 4 years later and say, hey, Jeff, do you remember me? I was that guy that had bipolar and you helped me get SSI, and I now have a $50,000 a year job. How do I get off the program? And we tell them what to do, and then that's considered a win.
That is a win. And that's actually a great point. SSDI, SSI, they're not necessarily for life, right? Like when you win a case or someone gets their application approved, what does that mean? Is it until symptoms are better, please let us know when they are? How does that work?
It would be nice if it was please let us know. So the answer is this is not a lifetime requirement. You go on SSDI or SSI, you can get better and go back to work. And
okay,
there are very good return to work rules, but they're very confusing. And we could do a whole nother segment just on how to go back to work on Social Security. But when I represent the 20 and 30 year olds, especially with mental illness, I will make them either shake my hand if we're in person or give me an agreement over our Microsoft Teams conversation that they are looking at this as a time program, time to treat, time to recover, time to retrain, and then time to return to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them when they call me about going back to work, their father has to take me out for a beer because that's when we're going to celebrate.
Yeah. So a dumb question. If I get SSDI and I want to start working again, I feel able to do so. SSDI, I imagine, doesn't pay all that much, right? What does SSDI pay? Does it depend?
SSDI depends upon your age and your earnings and how much you paid into the system, but the average American on Social Security disability insurance benefits is trying to survive on $1,590 a month.
So a lot of people can make more money working than that.
Oh, yeah. Nobody gets comfortable living on disability, no matter what Congress thinks.
Okay. So then they go out there, they get another job. If they were to not like tell anyone and they start earning, would someone eventually figure out that you have a job, you're working, and you're collecting SSDI? I can just feel a bunch of people out there going, oh my gosh, this is ripe for fraud. Your thoughts?
Social Security has a very strong continuing disability review system. They match up with the IRS to compare your Social Security number with the IRS records. So if you're working and getting a paycheck, you will get caught by Social Security. The key to everything, again, is communication. So if you're on SSDI and want to return to work, that's great. But just make sure that every month you go on to Social Security's website at ssa.gov, that you've opened up a My Social Security account, and every month you report your gross earnings, and then you'll avoid an overpayment. If you're on SSI, it's even easier. You download Social Security's mobile wage reporting app onto your telephone, and you report your monthly earnings there. And as long as you're reporting, even if Social Security goofs up and does overpay you, if you can prove that you've reported each month, you can get a waiver of that overpayment.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because you don't want to have to be getting clawed back and all that sort of stuff, which I imagine could be a real pain. 847, do you help, Jeffrey, with applying or appealing adult disabled child benefits?
So let's talk about what DAC benefits, adult disabled.
Tell you what, why don't we take this break here?
We're
due a break, and I want to dive into this correctly, especially if it's, let's dive into this. Jeffrey Rabin, your phone number in case someone's running out of the car.
It's 847-299-0008, 847-299-0008.
The 847 texted into Jeffrey Rabin, do you help with applying or appealing adult disabled child benefits? I cut you off to hit the commercial. Start over again, my friend.
Sure. So you remember we talked about SSDI, where you're totally disabled and worked and paid into the Social Security system. Well, there's a subset, and that's called Adult Disabled Child Application, or we call them DAC, Disabled Adult Child. If you are totally disabled before age 22 and you have a parent who is either on Social Security retirement or on Social Security disability or who died covered under the Social Security Act, you can collect SSDI based on your parent's account.
Even if they're still living and they're on Social Security.
If they're on Social Security retirement or disability, you can still collect.
And you were deemed totally disabled before 22?
Correct.
Okay. That sounds a little complicated. Does that happen where people get denied and you come forward and help them?
Well, we will take cases from the very beginning. We filed our applications for our clients, so they don't even have to do that part of it. But the answer is yes. There's two types of people that call us on DAC applications. One are people between 18 and 22 and who have a parent already getting retirement or disability, and we're arguing what their current status is because they're still under 22. The harder case is somebody who calls us and they're 30 or 35, and now they want to file a new application. They've never been on benefits, but they want to say they were totally disabled 13 years ago age 22 so they can collect on their parents' account. And those are much more challenging cases.
Well, you got to prove a total disability before 22.
Before age 22. And those records may not exist. The doctors may not be around anymore. They may have had big gaps in treatment, which makes proving how bad the symptoms are a harder challenge. There can be a lot of issues. But the answer to the texter's question is, yes, we do a lot of DAC cases in our office.
If they were already denied once?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Social Security's decisions are often wrong. We don't make our decisions based on what Social Security has done. Example, especially at the first level, they don't always get school records. And high school records can often document pretty severe functional problems. So we make sure that those records become part of the case.
Okay. 708, I suffered severe depression due to COVID. I couldn't work. When I tried to apply, I was told that I was ineligible because I had not contributed into Social Security for the last 10 years. I have contributed in Social Security in the past. I'm 55 years young. I tried to apply for SSDI. You mentioned a certain amount of quarters. Is there – well, walk us through what that means.
Let's talk about what that is. The general rule is a two-part FICA test.
Okay.
You must have worked and paid FICA taxes for 40 quarters in your lifetime.
Consecutively or over time?
Any time in your life.
So that's 10 years. Okay.
Correct. The second test is where your texter failed. You must have worked and paid FICA taxes for 5 of the 10 years. Their lingo is 20 quarters of the 40 quarters preceding the onset of becoming totally disabled. So let's take an example that I use. I walk out of your studio today. I'm a klutz. I fall and bang my head.
Please don't.
You take me over to Northwestern. They do an MRI and they say, oh my gosh, he's more brain damaged than he was when he got to Hanson's show. So now I'm totally disabled. So this is August of 2025. The first thing they would do is pull my earnings record and say, has Jeff worked for at least 40 quarters in his lifetime? I've done 40 years. I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
Then they pull my earnings record from 2014 to 2024, the 10 years prior to the day I became totally disabled, and have I worked at least 20 quarters during that time.
Okay. And those don't have to be consecutive either, but 20 out of the 40. So, correct. Unfortunately, this texter was, quote unquote, rightly denied according to Social Security's rules, even if we don't necessarily think that's the fairest thing, but it seems to have been what happened.
The analogy is paying for your car insurance. You pay for your car insurance, you're covered for a year. If you stop paying and you get in a car accident a year and a week later, they're not going to fix your car.
Mm-hmm. The 630 says a friend was denied SSDI. She's very disabled, but was a stay-at-home mom, so she didn't pay in. But her husband did. How is that fair? Yeah, does a spouse paying in cover you? No.
Actually, it's worse.
Oh, no.
So you cannot collect on the spouse, your spouse's earnings record, and because you're married, your spouse's income and assets are deemed to you, so she's not even eligible for SSI. This is a very evil part of the Social Security law. It's called deeming. And the basic rule in the United States, and I'm going to just say this for moms, although we've had moms and dads, is stay-at-home moms in the United States get screwed if they become disabled because they've stayed home to raise their children, so they're not
hard work.
Worked and paid into the system. And because they're married, they can't get SSI because their husband's assets and income are deemed to them.
That over that $2,000 threshold for SSI.
I have probably averaged a deeming call at least once a week, every week for 44 years. It's a huge issue in the United States. And it's, again, an anomaly in a country that puts so much lip service to family values, that we do not allow stay-at-home parents to contribute to the Social Security system in order to have these protections.
6-year-old says it gets worse. He divorced her.
That's very common. So I have a speech I give on Social Security law, and that's what I call part two of the story. And then she gets a divorce lawyer. He's had a good job, so she gets half of his 401k for her future, maybe $150,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's an asset. So she now has more than $2,000 in assets.
Mm.
So unless she spends it down below $2,000 or does some very expensive estate-type planning, she's still not eligible for SSI.
Okay, we got a lot of text also coming through. I'm going to try and give a couple to you off-air, but our time on the air is done, Jeffrey Rabin.
That goes by so quickly. I've got to say, John, you are a real professional.
Oh,
and being on this
you.
Show is a privilege, and I do appreciate it.
Well, that's kind of you to say. And not because you just said this, but because we are getting calls. Can you come in on Your Money Matters this week?
I will be there on Wednesday evening.
Do we have time? We do. Iridian says yes. Wednesday evening. Jeffrey Rabin. What's your phone number so people can reach you?
847-299-0008. And if you have to leave a message, we will get back to you.
Okay. Let's save some of these extra text messages that we get so you can keep them coming in. We'll save them for Jeffrey Rabin. He'll join us after the 6:30 news on Wednesday evening.